the Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Well, for years, it was a dream. Retire early, age 62, play golf, travel the world. And it was a dream that was in place for so many Americans for generation after generation. But times have changed. People are living longer. They're working longer. Joining me on the program is Mitch Anthony. Mitch, you believe that retirement is an unnatural phase of life that's run its course. In fact, you talk about we're at a tipping point on the issue of retirement. Explain that.
Well, yeah, we really are, Jim. First of all, a lot of people struggle with retirement. That's sort of what drew my attention to it, right? And the deeper I dug into the issue, the more I realized that retirement was sort of a social experiment. It was an industrial age invention that sort of has run its course, but we've hung on to it. And people have all sorts of challenges with it because of that. I call retirement an artificial finish line, Jim, because basic retirement policy is hinged to a number, your age, and a cultural, social, industrial expectation that when you reach 62 or 65, whatever that number may be, that this is what you're supposed to do. So that presupposes that all 62-year-olds are equal. I don't know if anybody would agree with that, right? And so people have varying degrees of energy, varying degrees of drive, varying degrees of motivation, varying degrees of interest and curiosity, and et cetera. And so how can we have a policy in place that says when you cross this line, this number, that you're done? I just don't buy into it. And so if you look at the history of retirement, it becomes pretty clear that it worked in the industrial age because people were trading physical capital for a paycheck. It was physical output. Physical energy was being expended to get paid. So it just made sense that a 62-year-old might be tired, and they replaced that 62-year-old in their industrial line with a 20-year-old, and the machinery resumes its efficiencies. But when we're no longer trading physical capital for a paycheck, but we're trading intellectual capital and experiential capital, the whole conversation changes, doesn't it?
Let's talk about that age 62, which was beginning Social Security benefits. Then it was age 65. Of course, they've pushed that out a couple of years. Mitch, was that originally based on life expectancy? Because I know we've seen life expectancy tables expand. Was it life expectancy where we got that number?
They put the marker originally at 65 in 1935. And then realized after they did that, that the average life expectancy of American workers was 63 at the time. Think of that.
Mm.
So in a period of 75 years, the life expectancy has expanded by almost a third to about 84 years of age. And so the original design, and by the way, they ratcheted back the age of eligibility for Social Security in 1937 to 62 because of that. So think about it. The life expectancy was 63, and people retired at 62, or began retiring.
And so you lived a year, collected a check, and died.
Absolutely right. And when you look at it, you know, and it's not that long ago. I can remember, I live in Rochester, Minnesota, home of the Mayo Clinic, and we got an IBM facility. I can remember just 20-some years ago reading these actuary tables of IBM employees, the average pensioner collected like 26 checks. I was talking to a friend the other day. When he was growing up, his buddy's dad retired from the railroad, and one of the perks, this is crazy, one of the perks they gave retired railroad guys was their liquor of choice for life. Can you imagine?
No gold watch, but you got liquor, huh?
No gold watch. So this guy had a garage full of Jack Daniels. You suppose that was helping the pension liability for the railroad?
You betcha.
It's unbelievable. So, you know, people just weren't living that long. But now contrast that with today, where people may live 30, 35, 40 years in quote-unquote retirement.
You know, I know it's one thing that strained the system. And we had, along with this idea of retirement, we've had a whole industry built around it. Del Webb came in and started building retirement communities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Wall Street responded, and the government did too, in terms of pension-type programs, whether it was IRAs. But you know, the world changed, Mitch, and you've seen this. a lot of companies, I can remember in my dad's era, you know, individual went to work for a company, spent 25, 30 years, maybe got a Timex watch and got something called a defined benefit pension plan where he knew exactly what he was going to have when he was retired.
That's right.
I don't know very many Fortune 500 companies that have defined benefit pension plans anymore.
No, they don't. Well, you know, we just had this happen at the Mayo Clinic, which is a leading healthcare institution, where they changed the defined benefit plan. So even in your nonprofit arena now, this is beginning to change in the 403B world. So look, here's the problem. Because they underestimated the liability of pensions, they are now reneging on those promises. I've always defined a pension as a promise that's good until it's not. And it seems like, you know, every year we read about companies that are pulling back and saying, no, we can't do that anymore.
Well, we're seeing it, as you mentioned, at the Mayo Clinic. You wonder how long it's going to be for the government. At one point in time, you went to work for the government, you made less money, but the idea was you had this nice, secure pension that was a defined benefit. Now we know that government wages, in many cases, exceed that of the private sector. And I know here in my own state of California, one of the real issues here, besides welfare liabilities, are pension liabilities for state workers.
Well, yeah, I think you probably have a more front row view of that issue playing out in California than anywhere else. You've got cities declaring bankruptcy over it. You know, I don't want to go down the political path, but we had really a political firestorm here in the Midwest with Governor Scott Walker in Wisconsin saying, you guys have to live in the real world too, and made adjustments to the benefits of public employees, and it didn't go over well.
Well, sooner or later, that reality is going to be forced even in the governmental sector as it's done in the retirement center. I want to talk about some of the implications of this, because one of the things that we're seeing in this world of 0% interest rates or financial repression, I mean, I use an illustration, Mitch, that gets the point across. If you wanted, let's say, $3,000 of monthly income in the year 2000, you wanted to be in something fairly conservative, bank CDs, or let's say I picked a 2-year treasury note. All it took was $540,000 in the year 2000. I could have got you $3,000 worth of income. Today, it would take over $8
million. That's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, so let's talk about the implications, because what we're starting to see, and I call it doing triage on many of the retirement plans that we're dealing with now, where individuals thought that they were going to have a certain rate of return, whether it was coming from bank CDs, treasury bills, or even bond funds. They're finding themselves 5 or 6 years into their retirement. Their income has dropped dramatically instead of gone up. They find themselves in a financial situation they didn't think they were going to be in when they retired. So is this one of the tipping point factors, not just the fact that companies are no longer offering that security that they once did with the defined benefit pension plan, but also with the issue of the returns on investments in the markets are also forcing people to look at retirement differently?
Well, yeah. I come at it from both the existential and the economic point of view, Jim. The topic here I'm going to go into is work itself. You can't have a conversation about retirement without talking about work, because what is it you're retiring from? And what I found in my research is that a lot of people actually end up missing aspects of work, and they get bored. How many bored retirees have you seen in your career, right?
Oh, a lot. I've had a lot of executives that retired early only to come back, or I've seen people that have sold their company and after 3 or 4 years of inactivity, they got bored out of their minds and went out and started another company.
And that's because work actually has benefits other than just economic. I'll get to the economic benefits. But the first discussion around work is, what benefits are there to work other than economic that help feed your life? And nobody's goal is to get enough money someday to become completely irrelevant, is it? Right? Some of us actually want to contribute to the world. And the traditional retirement vision is to go from being a contributor to a consumer. But what I find is the consumption lifestyle consumes people and they feel useless and aimless and worthless. And, you know, they get tired of it and they say, you know what, I'm going to do something. It's just, it's a new trend in our world. 60% of people that retire this year are going to go back to work part time within 6 months. And then we get into the what you're alluding to here, the economic aspects of this. I've always told people one of the scariest days of your economic life is the last day you cash a paycheck. And the reason that's one of the scariest days of your economic life is because from that day forward, the price of everything begins to matter. And the reason the price of everything begins to matter is because you now are on a static income and expenses will continue to rise over time, and that gap gets bigger and bigger between your income and the inflation rate, and that gap gets filled with anxiety. You've seen it over and over, haven't you?
Oh, I see it all the time, and I'll tell you one thing that also happens that is not planned for is you take a couple age 65, Mitch, as you well know, they could spend 25 years or a third of their life in retirement, and the numbers are out-of-pocket expenses will end up being almost $250,000 out-of-pocket expenses. I have a case right now where a widow had a stroke, and all of a sudden now the family is dealing with, you know, live-in care that's going to be almost $5,000-$6,000 a month, you know, $72,000 a year. There's an expense that wasn't planned for.
Yeah, exactly right. So, I mean, at the end of the day, the economic benefit of work is obvious, isn't it? I mean, having more income. And people are beginning to realize this, and some people go back to work because they need the income, but others go back to work just for a margin of safety, or maybe they can help pay some health benefits. And, you know, myself personally, I love what I do, and age has nothing to do with it. And as long as it's relevant, I define work this way, Jim. It's an engagement that brings value to others and meaning to you, okay? That could be a volunteer engagement, or it could be an engagement for pay. But it's an engagement that brings value to others and meaning to me. So at what age should one no longer want to bring value to others and meaning to themselves? Work is part and parcel of life. Freud said the only two things that matter in life are love and work.
Well, you know, it not only gives meaning, but you talk about four trends that portend the end of retirement thinking as we know it. One, the evolving pursuit of fulfillment in our times. Two, the end of the paternalistic employer. Three, the advent of dismantling ageism. And four, distribution-driven Armageddon for financial services. I'd like you to address each one of those and explain to our audience the impact they have on retirement.
What we've learned about a life of leisure, a life of nothing but leisure, does not fulfill people. As one gerontological researcher at the Mayo Clinic put it to me, a life of total ease is two steps removed from a life of total disease. And people are interested in aging successfully and aging well. So a life of fulfillment, what people are finding is really found in a life of balance between vocation and vacation. It's not being all vocation for 40 years and all vacation for the next 30. It's finding a balance between vacation and vocation, and actually, it's vocation that brings meaning to vacation, right? You know, it's like the guy told me on the golf course, he said it was a lot more fun when it was a catharsis for my work. Now my golf has become my work, and I'm not having as much fun. It makes sense, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Work gives meaning to leisure, and without work, leisure loses its meaning. And this is why there's a law of diminishing return on the life of leisure. People are saying, you know what, I can't do this anymore. I can't just play all the time. There are people moving out of those gated communities as well as moving in, right? And so it's that balance that people are looking for. We have a trend away from ageism. I mean, we have so many ageist policies in our world, especially in the working institutions, that someone that's 65 is looked at in a certain way, and of course nobody's going to come out and say it, but we have ageism prevalent in the workplace today. There's no question about it. And that is being changed, and there are people that are breaking those rules and saying, you know what, you're not going to define me by that number. What really matters is how productive I am, how engaged I am, how competent I am. And I always say to people, if you want to know when to retire, I can tell you exactly when to retire. You retire on the expiration date of your intellectual capital, your relational capital, and your experiential capital. You retire when you no longer care. That's when you retire.
Well, you know, you can see this with ex-presidents who, you know, after they leave the office, a high-stress job, go on, you know, I don't care if it's President Jimmy Carter or President Clinton or President Bush. They're all doing things that are productive and contributing in one form or another, or getting involved in one form or another in life. And that is a trend that you talk about here. I want to talk about one that people that work in government should pay attention to, because the age of the paternalistic government pension plan is going to be coming to an end, in my opinion, in the next 10 years.
Well, we're almost there.
Yeah, I mean, Scott Walker was a harbinger of things to come.
Yeah, he really is. And, you know, he's a firebrand out here, but it's inevitable, isn't it? Because when you don't have enough money on the income side to pay the liability, something's got to give. And what's going to give is the liability, because it's getting to the point where it's crippling states, it's crippling cities, it's crippling our system.
Let's talk about your comment on the distribution-driven Armageddon for financial services, because our industry is geared towards, you know, put your money in a 401k, put your money in a profit-sharing plan, gearing for retirement. Let's talk about how the financial industry is going to change, in my mind, for the betterment.
Yeah, well, the financial services industry, think about it, it's built around a concept called retirement, is it not, right?
That's all you see on TV today is retirement commercials.
Yeah, retirement savings. Well, and the idea in retirement is an anachronism in our times, and the idea, it's an ill-founded idea, it doesn't work in our system anymore, and the entire financial services industry is built around it, and so the entire financial services industry for decades has been telling people, save your money, grow your money, so someday you can retire. Well, what are they going to do when they retire? They're going to start drawing down assets. Well, how are most financial firms paid? They're paid on assets under management. So it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see where the trend's headed here. So yeah, change is needed, and to me, the change starts with realizing that the idea, the concept of retirement that we built this thing around is flawed, and we need to reexamine it on an individual level, not just an institutional level, but an individual level. What's good for you, the individual? I encourage people to form their own IRA, individual retirement attitude. What do you want to do with the rest of your life? How are you going to invest the rest of your life? And then secondly, how are we going to pay for this plan? And for many people, quite frankly, it's going to mean people are going to be working longer. Some are going to do it because they want to. Some are going to do it because they need to.
You know, it's funny because I have seen a lot of individuals become better investors instead of retiring early, where, you know, you've seen this, Mitch. You retire early and you get the static pie chart. Oh, you're age 65. You need to have 65% of your portfolio in fixed income. How does that work when treasuries are at 2%?
Right.
Number one. And so because they're going to be drawing down their assets, they want the security, they make, I think, poor investment choices.
Yeah.
Where if you were working part-time or had some income, you could say, you know what? I can have some money in some blue chip stocks. And yeah, I can ride out the fluctuations because I'm not totally dependent on what's happening in the stock market for my means of support.
Yeah, I've always been amazed at who dreams up this vision of the future. So I'm going to get enough money so I can someday retire and sit and stare at the ticker on CNBC all day and worry myself to death. Right? And
yeah.
You know what I tell the people who are staring at their CNBC ticker? And you know as well as I do, there are millions of people doing that right now as we speak. And you know what I tell them? Invest in Procter & Gamble, and I'll tell you why. Because they make Pepto-Bismol, and you're drinking it by the bottle.
Well, you know, I had a situation. I had a doctor. A third generation of planning with this family started with his father, and then I started to plan with him. And his goal was to have X amount of dollars when he retired. Well, at age 65, his partners and him closed the practice. Two of them stayed on. He retired. And then he said, you know what? I'm still young enough, and I still like what I'm doing. So he found a part-time job that he worked from age 65 to age 70 and a half when he had to start taking money out of his retirement. At age 70 and a half, and he walked into my office and said, you know what? I'm willing to step down now. You know, I'm tired. I'd like to do a little bit more traveling. Two of his kids live overseas, so that was another motivation. But he worked an additional 5 years, so that was very fulfilling.
Yeah.
And when he did reach age 70 and a half, he had a lot more money to live on because he wasn't drawing it down at age 65. And I think he's had a more fulfilling life.
Absolutely. And the beauty of that story, Jim, is that he retired on his own terms. But let's just talk about the economics of that. The delay game is what we're all going to have to play. And people don't like the word wait. I know that. So we don't want to talk about waiting, but we do want to talk about delaying. And you know, for example, even with Social Security, if you delay from age 62 to 70, your benefit goes up exponentially, right? And then how about not touching those retirement savings for those 8 years? How much growth could you experience in those 8 years? I've seen studies that show, and you probably have charts that illustrate this, Jim, that if you delay your Social Security from 62 to 70 and you don't touch retirement savings, you just work in that period up till 70, the income you're going to realize at age 70, it's almost equal to having an additional $500,000 in your nest egg.
We've done this. In this particular case, he decided to allow his Social Security benefits to accrue to age 70 because it was growing at 9% a year. I mean, how many people would invest in the market if they could get a guaranteed return of 9% a year?
And that's what he's getting for delaying.
Yeah.
Here's the funny thing. I'm sure anyone who's interested in math knows what compounding wealth is. Well, when does compounding wealth have its greatest impact? In the late stage.
Absolutely.
And this is exactly when we unplug it. Just as it's about to explode and compound, we unplug it at age 62.
And see, this is one of the things that he discovered when we were looking at his plan, when he said, look, you know, I don't want to retire. I want to work part-time. He goes, I don't need my Social Security. And I said, well, the good news is if you don't touch your Social Security at age 66, which would have been his full retirement benefits, I said, the good news is it's growing at 9% a year.
Yeah.
He looked at that. He said, 9% a year guaranteed by the government, I'll take it. And that's exactly what he did. I want to cover a final point. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal, which made me think about what you were talking about here. They had found that people that work longer live longer.
Yes.
So let's talk about what it means for health.
Yeah, well, what it means for health is that you're engaged, right? Work is good for us. I mean, this is the thing that seems to be missing in all this retirement policy, right? Work is good for us. Here's the bottom line. Let me share with you what's driving this. It's concern for health. One of the latest findings of the Dementia and Alzheimer's Institute was that they said they literally figured out what the finger in the dike was holding back the progression of both those disease states. And do you know what it was, Jim?
Work.
Maintaining intellectual challenge in your life. So this explains why people who work longer live longer. The brain is an organ. If you don't use it, you lose it. And I talk to guys all the time who go into retirement and they're telling me, you know, guys who used to be in sales and they're saying within 2 months I wasn't as lucid and articulate as I used to be. My thoughts weren't snapping together. So what people are learning to embrace here is that we have to maintain a level of challenge, both intellectually and physically and energy-wise in our lives. And if we don't, we just start going down the spiral. So that is one of the biggest factors that impacts the study of that article.
Well, let's talk about, as we close here, you are so convinced about this. You did a lot of research. You wrote a book. It's called The New Retirement Mentality. Tell our listeners about it, because I think it's a well worth a read.
Well, that's interesting, Jim. The New Retirement Mentality is in its fourth edition. And when I first wrote this book in 2001, people looked at me sideways and wondered what I was smoking, because I said everything I'm saying today, but I was saying it in 2001. Well, now the reality, I think the market correction and the Great Recession in 2008 and people sort of having to reexamine this has brought the whole world toward the conclusion that I brought in 2001, and that is that this really isn't that great an idea, retirement. And not only from a health perspective, but from an economic, both microeconomics and macroeconomics and personal economics, and from a lifestyle point of view, and from a balance in life point of view between vacation and vocation, it's not that great an idea. So the world is coming around and saying, I guess we need to rethink this thing. And so, yeah, The New Retirement Mentality, you can go online, get the book, and I'm going to tell you, it's a life changer for a lot of people, because what I challenge people to do is to think this through for themselves and to make a personal decision, not let them, the world, the institutions, the governments, and the social expectations around you tell you what to do with your life. This is your life. Invest it the way you want to.
Well, listen, Mitch, some great thoughts there, because I'm seeing it in reality with clients or incoming clients. They either didn't have the assets they thought they were going to have, and that's certainly becoming more of a reality. You're not seeing the defined benefit pension plans, the investment markets, the yields on savings aren't what they used to be. And then I'm also seeing on the other end, people are saying, you know what, I got bored with retirement. I'm doing something different. And I did this for a living throughout my adult life, but here was something I always wanted to do, and sometimes they take up different careers. So it's kind of an exciting concept. Mitch, once again, if they'd like to find out more about your book, how could they do so, please?
Just go online, The New Retire Mentality. It's the word retire with the word mentality tacked on to the end. New Retire Mentality. My name is Mitch Anthony, and they can get it at any bookseller.
Well, listen, Mitch, thanks for joining us on the program. All the best to you, sir, and some great thoughts.
It's been a pleasure, Jim. Thank you so much.
Well, that concludes this week's Lifetime Income. Well worth the read. I'd highly recommend that you get a copy of this book and rethink some of the things you're doing in retirement, because he talked about some realities here that we're starting to see. We've talked about this on the show several times. Employers are getting rid of retirement defined benefit programs, and it's not going to be much longer before it goes away in government. So if you're in government today, watch out. You may see reductions in these promises because there simply isn't the money to pay for them. Secondly, you know, and here's probably the most important one, is I've interviewed experts in the health field, from Dr. Small at the UCLA Longevity Center on Alzheimer's and dementia. And the conclusions here, 75% of dementia and a lot of these diseases have a lot to do with lifestyle. And, you know, keeping your brain active, doing things are so much more positive. And I think it's becoming more of a reality as we take a look at investment returns. These are the most dismal returns I've ever seen in savings. And I've been in this business 35 years now. And so rethink retirement. You may find it refreshing to work part-time and do something. Maybe there is something you did, you know, during your working career and you said, you know, I always wanted to do something different. I had a client who retired from the publishing industry, moved to the West Coast, lived up near Hearst Castle, visited, and ended up becoming a tour guide because he loved the place and had a very, very fulfilling part-time job that he just absolutely loved. So rethink on retirement. You got to think outside the box today because we certainly live in a different environment where things are changing, whether it's on the healthcare front or on the investment front. Well, we've run out of time. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.